This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
Y'all can go to Destin with them tourists all around. I'll go to South Texas where my friends can be found. Lord, I know that's in Fort Alto.
All right, guys, we are back for another episode of the Deep in the Hunt of Texas podcast. I am your host, Connor Little. Man, we are in the dog days of summer here, folks. It is a balmy 96 degrees here and wind blowing about 20 miles an hour. You step outside and it feels like somebody's blowing a hairdryer on you. So definitely not, I'm not getting the hunting vibes right now. I think not many people are, at least if you're hunting in Texas. It's about, you know, not as far as what you can see. I think we've kind of, once you get after June, which it'll kind of crest into that back half of the off season. So I think, you know, things are looking up a little bit. But today we have, you know, someone who's been doing this a lot longer than I have, and hopefully I can lean on him for some expertise here. We have Brandon McDowell of the Tejas Hunt Club. How you doing, Brandon?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Excited to be on the other end of this whole podcast thing for once in a little while.
Dude, I've found that almost being a guest is harder than being a host. Because, yeah, like, I can kind of lead somebody to water a little bit and let them drink, where when you're the guest, you're the one who has to do the drinking. So it's a little bit more pressure on you.
And I know the back end stuff too. So like, I always want to have everything right on my side when I am a guest to make sure like everything's good. Cause I know what it's like to be on the other side and be editing something and you're like, I wish this was better or something like that.
For sure. And dude, I hate editing. I hardly ever edit. I throw my little music on the front and back and I'm like, okay, off to the races.
Yeah. Yeah.
It especially is what it like, is at this point.
Like we were talking earlier about Riverside. It makes it a whole lot easier to be able to do that. When I first started the podcast, Riverside didn't do all the cool things it does now. And I actually did edit it in Premiere. So
See, that's like, you know, at work now, all these people, when I was like getting into out of college, they were like super good at Excel. And it was like very important skill. And now none of it matters. I just, anything at work that's spreadsheet related. And I had to learn it eventually, but now I'm like, I didn't even need to learn any of this. I just throw it in Claude and tell it what to do. And
100%, dude, 100%. We are big fans of Claude at Silencer Shop. I mean, and in my own business stuff too, but like we use Claude for a lot of it. And I mean, it makes it so much easier, like, especially cause like it learns you and it can kind of like make stuff sound better. And it doesn't sound like AI slop, like a lot of the stuff that's being put out right now is.
For sure. I don't know if that's even scarier or if it's cool. Because I'm sure at some
point. Yeah. I've chosen to be on the optimistic side of this whole AI thing. And I understand that there could be some ramifications. I hope that there's a balance. And that's what I would like to understand. Because, I mean, to me, it's like when people are screaming, the sky is falling about AI. And then I look at history and I'm like, y'all kind of said this about the internet. And then there was people that said this about TV. And then there was people that said this about the radio. And it just goes on and on back. So it's like, at some point, we kind of have to get rid of the sky's falling mentality and just look at like, how is this going to benefit us? And then find the line to where it's like, okay, yeah, that's where we need to stop.
No, for sure. And it's funny you say that, like going back to history, you know, going back to the 1800s, I was a history major in college. This is going to be the most random pull fact of the day.
Oh, cool. I love history.
So when they were building all the railroads, Pacific Union across the United States in the late 1800s, early 1900s, when they first started doing that, people were really nervous about how fast the trains would go because they thought if the trains went over 25 miles an hour, that like your insides would basically just like melt. And so everyone was terrified of train to travel for this little bitty amount of time until people finally realized like, hey, you're not going to die going 60 miles an hour on a train across the country on a locomotive.
Right.
And if
you could take that person and like show them somebody in a fighter jet going mock Jesus, they'd probably they would lose their mind.
Oh, they actually might die. I mean, I've seen those videos on YouTube with the guys pulling the G's and, you know, their face starts melting like the guy in Indiana Jones. And it looks like some intense stuff. I've never been. I know some people who have, you can like go up in them, not quite, you know, they're not going in like F-35s, but, you know, they're going up in something that's pretty fast and you can be a, you know, do a little demo flight. And that looks pretty interesting. I guess for me, the biggest thing about, and I guess I'm talking about both sides of my mouth because I work in commercial fencing and this is what pays my bills, but is the data centers kind of scare me more than anything. Because I mean, the amount of water those things suck up is pretty hefty.
Yeah. And I honest with you, man, I've been hearing both sides of the story and I haven't sat down to really like dig into it myself. And like, I have to get more educated on it because it's like, I see people share stuff on Facebook and you do too. Like, and sometimes it's like, do you realize what you're sharing? Do you know that this is a post from 2017 that you're bringing up again? And then, but not about the data centers, but like just some of the stuff that I've seen. I mean, like I said, I don't know. I didn't go to school for AI data centers. I went to school for ag engineering and technology. So I guess it could be data centers if they consisted, went with ag, but I don't know. I just got to learn more about it because I don't think it's good. I don't think we should be sacrificing farmland and hunting land for data centers. I can say that for like 100% because like I know that there's I know there's plenty of abandoned buildings in a lot of cities that, I mean, why can't, if you're going to do a data center, and it might be because of the water issue, like I said, I don't know, but why can't those buildings be used or like for the solar and stuff like that too? Like, why can't those buildings be used and like leave the farmland and stuff alone for like a last resort? Because we can't create anymore.
For sure. No, for sure. And I think like, especially with the solar thing too, like I've never like dawned on me like how many other places you can put solar stuff on.
Yeah.
Versus like, you know, just a random field in the middle of nowhere.
And it would be more beneficial. That was like one of the things I did study like in school for ag engineering and stuff. But it was like, why can't we attach these solar panels? I mean, they do to put them on some houses and stuff. But like you could put them on these buildings and run the electricity straight to the building if you really wanted to like save, you know, energy. Because it's not easily transported, right? So it has to be used relatively close to where it's being generated from. So you could stack all these solar panels and put them on these buildings and then you could help or supplement the power to a lot of these buildings instead of pulling it from the grid. But that's not where they choose to put them, unfortunately.
Interesting. Yeah, because I know, well, I know some people. I actually have a buddy of mine who has some land in Central Texas, and it's actually probably like 3 or 4 miles from where I guess SpaceX is moving their chip center or something to.
Yeah.
It's kind of around College Station, and he's like, dude, okay, it's going to be insane when it happens. And so I guess they announced that not too long ago. And it's like, you know, and around him are a bunch of solar farms and on top of that too. And it's like, dude, it's just, I don't know. It seems like there's got to be better options out there, but you know, there's land is cheap out in the middle of nowhere versus, you know, just outside of Fort Worth where I am.
Yeah.
So I'm sure the real estate moguls, there's some economic reasons for that too. Cause,
No doubt. I know
some people that have sold land around here that bought it 40 years ago that have walked away with a pretty penny.
Yeah, that's no lie. Like, I mean, even houses, like there's people, like I live just north of Austin, and when we were moving over here, it was hard to find places to rent. And then it was like ridiculous. And then there, I got buddies at work and stuff that are buying houses and or trying to buy houses and stuff. And it's like, what you're finding is not what you want. And it's extremely high. Like it just, there's not really a win-win situation there.
For sure. And you know, to tie it back to hunting here too, I mean, the price of a deer lease now is insane.
Yeah.
Especially like around, you know, if you're in somewhat close, if you live in an urban area, cause you know, if you want to get someplace that's hour and a half outside of Houston, Dallas, Austin, like it's going to cost you.
Yeah. Good luck. I mean, it's always been like the culture, obviously, in Texas, like deer leases and stuff like that. And I'm sure it was relatively cheaper. I mean, I don't know. I was a kid. I was born in 1991. So like my buddies going to their deer lease or like when they would talk about it, I don't know what their parents were paying for them back then. I mean, we'd have to ask them, but obviously everybody says everything is more expensive now. But I mean, that's just kind of the way it is in Texas. Either you find a lease or you can find you a good guide or outfitter and work out, you know, a good relationship where you can, you know, maybe put down a deposit every year and have a place to hunt, or you can go out of state. And I choose to kind of do a mix of all of them. Well, luckily I have, you know, a camera that I can tote around and stuff. So that kind of gets me permission on some places for sure. It's a definite door opener. So that's been the main way that I've played it in my life. Cause like I didn't grow up in a family that hunted. I mean, it wasn't like we were against hunting or anything like that. But like my dad didn't hunt. My mom didn't hunt. My grandpa did, but he passed away before like I was like old enough, and he wasn't like a big hunter. He just, you know, he shot a deer to make sausage with, that kind of deal. And then, but just, there was something, I don't know. I had a lot of buddies that hunted a lot and family friends and stuff, but there was just something about hunting and like, especially traveling and hunting, like when I was growing up, that like, I loved from the start. Like it kind of didn't make sense, I guess. Like I grew up in South Texas. It's in a town called Goliad. If you know anything about Texas history, I hope you do. It's pretty important in it. And it's a cool place to grow up. I say this to everybody. It was probably the best place for me to grow up. It's right where the coastal Bend region kind of meets like South Texas brush country. So it's like 45 minutes to saltwater for catching reds and trout and everything else. And then like an hour we're in Freer or George West, you know, where big deer country is, South Texas and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's big deer in Goliad, Refugio, all those counties down there just are known for wildlife. So grew up 4-H, all that kind of stuff. Farming, ranching, hauling hay, all those good summer jobs that you need to have as a strapping young lad in Texas. But really fell in love with like ag and hunting and fishing and all that kind of stuff. 4-H, I shot competitive shotgun, so trap, skeet, sporting clays, five stand from about seventh grade through high school. And then I shot a year and a half in college. So that was really my biggest forte, like in the outdoors, but got to do a lot of hog hunting. Had a lot of buddies with dogs. We did that, all that stuff. Did spot and stalk, shoot them from a blind, a little bit of everything.
Dude, that's awesome. And I think I love hearing stories like that because it's very similar to my story. Like I didn't grow up hunting per se. Grew up fishing a ton. My dad was like a complete sicko. And I'm sure you know those guys that are just like hardcore bass fishermen. And yeah, what I've realized about like the hardest core bass fishermen is they don't want to do anything else.
That's
all they want to do. I mean, he would drag me to like golf courses on like weeknights after baseball practice because he's like, I know a good golf course pond and it's right down the road. He could not get enough of it. And so it is kind of not funny, but I find it interesting how many people I talk to on here who didn't grow up hunting. Cause most of my buddies, their dads grew up hunting. And sometimes I'm kind of like, dang, it would have been nice to, you know, have the legacy deer lease and not have to get on with somebody.
I'll tell you, from 8 to 9 year old, because my birthday is November 1st. So it's usually like right at rifle deer season, right? So like young Brandon was real upset because like all his buddies were like going hunting and going to their deer lease and stuff. And he was not. Like the best thing that I got to do was wake up that next morning. I mean, every now and then, like a couple of my friends would let me go with them or something like that. Like that was not the case. But like most of the time it was like, Brandon, until I found those friends, it's like, you're going to be watching TNN on Saturday morning and you're going to get to watch somebody else go hunting on TV or the outdoor channel or whatever.
OLN, baby.
Yep, OLN.
Oh man, I see. And I am kind of curious. Like, when did you realize like you wanted to get into hunting? Because like for me, example, like I was like 6 years old, and I turned on the OLN, and you know, it started off with you remember on ESPN they used to have bass fishing on Sunday mornings.
Yep.
And then it progressed into me watching OLN. You know, you get down the Bill Dance Chronicles and all that back in the day, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Actually, it's probably longer than that. It's kind of terrifying that I can recall any memory that was 25 years ago. I just turned 32 yesterday. Yeah. So,
happy birthday.
Thank you. It's hit me a little bit, but I saw a guy bow hunt for deer and I was just like, I mean, I was probably 7, 8 years old and I'm like, I want to do this. Like, this is what I want to do. So what was that kind of that moment for you where you're like, or was there one, or it's just kind of something you were always interested in because you were around it growing up?
I mean, it was something probably because like where I was, like we always had buddies like, or an uncle or somebody's uncle was a guide or something like that. But it was also like TV. Like when I was a kid, you could still stay up late and watch Disney Channel and Old Yeller would come on. Where the Red Fern Grows would come on. So like seeing those movies and being like, oh, well, to be a boy, I'm supposed to have some hunting dogs and I'm supposed to go do all this stuff. Like, this is what, like, and then like Old Yeller was set in Texas, right? And then like Where the Red Fern Grows was Oklahoma. So it's like, this is where I'm from. Like, this is, I kind of like related, like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing kind of deal, I guess. And then of course, reading the books as you get a little bit older after you've seen the movies. And then I grew up for like ranching and all that kind of stuff. So like we watched the PBR on TNN. Well, what came on after that was like hunting and fishing. And then we watch Bo and Luke Duke, and what are they doing? Shooting bows and arrows. So it's like, I feel like a lot of the TV that I had as a kid promoted that kind of stuff. And then you kind of just fell along with it. Like we weren't watching anime. Like, you know what I mean? We weren't watching that kind of stuff. It was like actual things. So then, you know, you grow up and you learn about Texas and you learn about big whitetails and you got Texas Trophy Hunter magazine. And you could, there, like I said, I was lucky. Like there's ranches in Texas in Goliad that were on the Outdoor Channel. So like when they would pop up and they'd be like, we're in South Texas right now, you know, hunting big whitetails in the rut. And then Goliad, Texas would pop up at the bottom. And I'm like, that's my hometown. Like they're right down the road. Like there's big deer right here where I'm at. So it's like I said, it's probably just like a perfect storm of like, I don't know, all my interests in being where I was from to really make me love it, I guess.
And I will say, circle back to the Goliad thing. I've driven through a few times on my way to fish and I've always wanted to like just stop and really like get in to see the monuments and stuff like that with the, you know, the whole history portion and the massacre at Goliad and all that. That was actually, it's funny you say that because being a history guy, Texas history was my favorite class in college 100%. By far.
I got in an argument with my professor because he was talking about refugio because that's how it's spelled. You know, when you go through Goliad and you keep going south, and he kept saying Refugio, and I raised my hand. I said, sir, you know, it's Refugio. And he's like, no, it's not. No, it's not. I'm like, well, I'm going to tell you right now, I grew up 25 minutes from there. And if you went to that town and said it like that, everybody's going to look at you funny. Just letting you know. Dude. But yeah, that whole area is full of history.
I think we could do a whole podcast on like weird Texas pronunciations. Between Bernie and Palestine and all that. I had somebody like, oh, if you tell somebody Palestine, if they're from Palestine, Texas, mm-hmm. they get real mad.
Yeah, they get real mad. Like Burnett. It's not Burnett, it's Burnett.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Got you.
Or like what is it? Buddha, not Buddha.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. But I think you kind of grew up in, wow, dude, I would love to live down there someday because I love Fort Worth. I really do.
Had a lot of good times there.
Well, I'm going to Billy Bob's this weekend, so.
Heck yeah.
I will say I would much rather live 45 minutes from the coast than 20 minutes from Billy Bob's. Granted. Yeah. It can be a lot of fun though. But it's kind of funny. I kind of make fun of people from up here, even though I am from up here, and call it not. This is like fake Texas, especially people from Dallas. You know, the people from Dallas don't get a whole lot of love on this podcast. I make a very clear delineation that I'm from Fort Worth.
I have family that lives in Arlington.
Okay, they're in the middle. We won't throw too much shade toward Agtown's way, but I always call like south of like Waco like real Texas, because like doing what I do, being in construction, like all these contractors and stuff that we're whining and dining, all they want to do is go fish, all they want to go do is hunt, and that's just like the culture down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people that have like their own companies, and that's, you know, they get taken out by vendors to go hunt and fish. Dude, I try and take somebody hunting or fishing up here, and they look at me like I'm crazy. They're like,
really?
Yeah, they're like, what, huh? No, I'm too busy. I don't want to do that. Can you get me like Cowboys tickets or something like that? And I'm like, I guess. So I guess I need to move, because I'm clearly in the wrong part of the state. Because my family has some land up in Bowie, and I've even offered, like, I know you've been talking about, like, do you just want to like come shoot a couple does? Because I can't. No one in my family hunts. It's a decent sized ranch. I'm like, do you want to come shoot some does? And I kind of hinted as like a entertainment thing, but I'm also like, yeah, please come shoot some does.
Yeah.
Please. So
that's crazy to me, man. Cause I mean, that's part of the culture down there too. It's like, it's oil and gas. Like everybody's dad worked in oil and gas or in some capacity. So it's like that was a part of like going hunting. Like same thing you said, like you take contractors out and, you know, get to shoot an oryx or something like that, you know, especially with the exotics and everything. But like, yeah, that's part of it as well. But that's not that's kind of sucks that you don't get to like partake in that, you know, with the contractors. Cause you know, part of the deal is like, you get to go out there too.
No, I know that I'm trying to mooch off the company. I'm my best friend. I just did a podcast with him yesterday, and he's got like a 240 inch deer that sitting up on behind him. And I'm not a huge high fence hunter, but if somebody's going to pay for a free 240 inch deer, I'm not going to say no. Damn sure.
I've hunted behind high fence. I've hunted low fence. I don't care what you do. As long as you're being legal about it. Now, am I going to participate in some high fence hunts? Probably not. Like, I mean, but on a bigger ranch or something like that, like, oh, 100%, especially if somebody else is paying for it.
I was going to say,
it's not cheap.
I was going to say, you and me might differ a little bit. If somebody wants to pay for it, I'll do whatever you want as long as it's legal. I won't discriminate on that for sure. Take me out to my 10 acre pen where, shoot somebody's 15-year-old breeder buck. It's like on its last leg. Oh gosh, that's
funny. I love looking at them. Like that's a part of what we do is like we have a media company, so we've had some clients that are in that industry, you know, in the deer breeders and the exotics and stuff like that. So I've gotten to see some pretty big deer. I've gotten to see some cool animals that you wouldn't normally get to see, and it's been a lot of fun.
And I think since I started doing this, I mean, I have like no high fence experience, because I was the guy who was like, making fun of all my friends when they would go like high fence hunting. And even, you know, there, like you said, there are levels to it where it's like, they're especially down where you're from in South Texas, like there's legitimate 20,000-30,000 acre high fence ranches.
Yeah.
And like that's a different ball game than, you know, somebody having an 800 acre high fence ranch. It's two totally different things, but it's, I have found fascinating talking to people, some of the intricacies of that whole operation. I mean, I am becoming fascinated by the ag side of it because it's a very meticulous, process you have to go through that is much, much more difficult for my little bit of knowledge in the cattle industry. It is much, much more difficult.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. All those animals,
in a lot of ways.
To put it simply, all those animals want to die. Like it's, especially like some of the, like the more exotic stuff, but I mean, in all honesty, being honest, like they are pretty hardy. It's just, they have to be in the right environments. And I mean, Texas is essentially the right environment, but it's also carrying capacity. It's also how much feed are you bringing in? Are you going to supplement with what is available for them naturally that's on the landscape and what they're going to eat and stuff? And then also it's like, if you have two or three different species of animals in the same area, like they might not get along. So that might cause problems as well. And you think this species is getting food while this other species is running it off. And then these start dying or get sick. And it is a lot, I think, more, intricacies, like you said, than it is just with like cattle or sheep.
You just gotta feed lambs. Just gotta feed them and worm them. That's it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's cool. I've gotten to grow up around it. Like you said, I've been around high fences. I mean, since I was a little kid. So it's like, those were something that wasn't new to me because they were down there. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of ranches in Goliad that people hunt on and stuff like that. And I mean, Gonzales and all that whole area down there.
For sure. And it's so different too. Cause like I got the opportunity to go hunt in Uvalde for dove hunting for the first time last year. And that was a different experience, but I'd never been around that part of Texas, like down by Uvalde, and you get south of San Antonio and it's just high fence on both sides. It feels like almost the entire way down. Well, I want to kind of get into Teos Hunt Club. Like what was kind of, you know, kind of what, let's maybe start at like what led up to that and, you know, how you got it started or what was the kind of the impetus of like, hey, I want to start a media company, who you started it with and then kind of go from there.
Yeah. So, it really started probably 2015, 2016. My wife, who's also my business partner in Bar MC Media, which is our media company, and Teos Hunt Club. She graduated from A&M. We were living in College Station. We lived at this place called the Flying Ace Ranch. It was an awesome time. If you know anything about College Station and you were remotely tied to like rodeo or horses or anything, you probably know about the Flying Ace Ranch and you probably have some memories that you would probably soon to forget. but it was kind of like a mix of day working cowboys, barrel racers, Western pleasure people, Texas college rodeo kids, just all living in an area where there's a bunch of duplexes, an arena, and a big horse farm. So my wife at the time, like I said, graduated A&M. She had a job. I was still going to school, but it wasn't really doing anything for her. Like she was going to work, making money, but just like, what else am I supposed to be doing? Well, she used to be a photographer in high school. So I was like, hey, they're having a roping up here at the arena. Why don't you go take some pictures? So little did I know, like my wife's a really good photographer. Like I knew she took pictures, but she was like really good even back then. And I was like, this is pretty cool. Like maybe you should do this. Like there's ropings and stuff all over the place. Like you should, you know, start taking pictures. And this is around the same time, like Dale Brisby started, if you know who that is, and like Randy Kattari, who was filming all of Dale's stuff. Like this is about the same time they started on the video side. So my wife started taking photos. She got hired by a bunch of different organizations, ropings, around that area. and she was just going and taking pictures. Well, then people started asking, like, hey, do y'all do video? And we were like, no, we don't really do video right now. Like, I wasn't even taking pictures yet. And I was like, you know what we're going to do? I'm going to go buy the newest iPhone because it shoots in 4K, and I'm going to start video and stuff. And like, by this time, I was out of college. I graduated, like I said, I graduated from Sam Houston State with a degree in ag engineering and technology. What kind of led me into that while all that was going on was I had to write a paper on emerging technology in agriculture, and I wrote it on drones. So at the end of this 10-page paper, I decided I was going to get my drone license and fly like real estate and video and do all that kind of stuff. So I was doing that around that same time that we started doing video. And we just started going to different events. We got to the point where we were going to shoot PBRs. She was doing photos. I was doing video. And then I kind of just upgraded as we got different jobs and stuff on my camera equipment to get better at shooting video. And then we were going pretty good 2017, 2018, 2019. We had a whole bunch of going to rodeos. We went and shot my hometown rodeo in Goliad, and we're just you know, playing around with it. Like, we both still had day jobs. At that time, I went from working from a civil engineering firm right out of college to building houses at D.R. Horton, and then quit that. And then I was working full time for a real estate agent in Huntsville, Markham Realty, and I was doing all of their media and stuff and marketing. And then 2020 happened. And as we all know, a lot of people's lives changed in 2020, some for the better and a lot of people for the worst. I just fortunately was one for the better. That all happened. All the rodeos got shut down and we're like, what are we going to do? Well, we still got to keep filming stuff. We still got to keep doing stuff, but it's like, we need to figure out something else to film. Well, a lot of people didn't have jobs. A lot of people were going hunting and going fishing, and even if they did still have jobs, and we just started going with our friends because they're like, hey, we're going to go down to Louisiana and go to down to Grand Isle, go fish for tuna. We're going to go run down to South Texas and go hunt some black buck. And like, we'll just go film this stuff. We'll do that instead. Like, I love hunting. And we were kind of doing some hunting ourselves, and we kind of played around with filming some of our stuff. And we'd go to the deer lease that we had with Megan's parents and everything. And when we get opportunities to go, but we really hadn't dove into it because we were heavy into rodeo. It's something that we both still care about and we still do, but that was like what we were doing mostly. And we got some opportunities in 2020 to start filming outdoor content. And then we started posting it to our page, BarMC Media, and it wasn't doing as well. Our rodeo stuff, playing with the algorithm and all that kind of stuff. But like, the rodeo stuff would do great. Post a hunting video, wouldn't work. Nobody saw it. No views. So I was sorry. And then I was like, man, let's just start another page and we'll just start posting there. Right. And by this time I was listening to a lot of hunting podcasts. I was watching YouTube hunting and stuff like the Hushin guys, the Born and Raised. Not that I ever thought it would be something like that, but I was like, to me at that point, it's like, I want to go film for these guys, right? I want to go film for other people and make content for them. I want to be the dude behind the camera because that's going to get me on the hunting trips and everything else a whole lot easier than like me behind the gun, right? So I wanted a place to post the content so people could see and then potentially, you know, hire us for that kind of stuff, right? So I was like, let's start another page. And I was like going back and forth on names. Tejas is obviously people associated with Texas, but it was more about like the meaning of Tejas is like friends, because that's kind of how everything started, right? And it started because we were going to film our friends doing stuff and our friends hunting. It's kind of a throwback also to the old school hunting clubs, which was also still about, you know, friends getting together and hunting. Like, yeah, we're out here to kill animals. And don't get me wrong, like that's the goal. That's what we're out here to do. But it's also coming back to camp with that animal and everybody cheering and clapping and, you know, drinking beer if that's what you do, and then having a good time by a fire and like kids running around and like growing up and like all that kind of stuff. So I was like, we're gonna name it Tejas Hunt Club because I wanna like bring back that older school tradition of the hunt club. Right. But not necessarily at a hunt club. Like, this is a place virtually, if you will, right? Because at start, like, we had content, but it was like we were sharing a bunch of other people's stuff too. And like, I always wanted to do that as a part of it, was like to share other people's trips and hunts and like congratulate them on what they're doing.
Dude, that's awesome. I love kind of the naming too, because that's something I guess I've reflected on here in the past couple of years, because I have a group of buddies that will come up to my family's place and we'll all hunt together. And I, you know, admittedly have, how do I want to say this? I've had my asshole puckered a little bit, because I can get a little tense around the place, just because, you know, I think that's kind of the cycle everybody goes through when you're like in your early mid 20s, where you're just like, big deer, gotta kill big deer. That's all that matters. And now I'm starting to get a little older. I don't see my friends as much. All of them have kids. They're getting married. It's not, we're seeing each other 24/7 now. And now it's like, gosh, I just want to hang out with them.
We still want to
shoot some deer. We still want to shoot some ducks. But at the same time, like, I don't really care anymore.
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. But
I'm 100% with you, because like when Megan and I first started dating, like, she fished a lot. That's what she grew up doing. She grew up in Angleton, south of Houston. So like, her family fished. They hunted a little bit, but not that much. And then I had some buddies, because right after I graduated high school, I went and lived in Kingsville. I went to Texas A&M Kingsville for a year. So I had some buddies down there, and it was easy for us to be like, you'd walk out of your dorm room at 8 o'clock in the morning, and like, you'd walk by and you'd be like, hey, what are y'all doing? And like, be like two guys walking with fishing poles. And they're like, dude, the redfish are biting down right now. Like, and they're like, you want to go to class or you want to go fishing? It's like, I think we're going to go fishing. And like, you could get down to Baffin, like, cause we're right there next to Baffin Bay. I mean, and there's a bunch of piers and stuff that you can walk down, or you can like walk off behind, and kind of like, if the tide's right, you could just walk by and find these pockets of redfish. And I mean, it wasn't nothing to like come back from class and people would be grilling redfish right there in the quad in between the dorms, cause they went down and caught some fish real quick. Like, that was like the cool part of like being down there in Kingsville. But I met some cool dudes down there, and we used to go down there and dove hunt. Special white wing season, and like, it looks like what you would see in Argentina or Mexico, like, if you catch it right. In the years that we were down there, it was just like a big group of us would get a house down there. It would be like, some of us would be with the like our girlfriends, some of them would show up single, whatever it was, just like 15 to 18 people all crammed in this house, and all we care about is drinking beer and going to kill doves. And that's what we did for a few years running.
That's awesome.
But like you said, people get older, they get married, they have kids, and like, those kind of trips kind of fade off. But it's like, you still got to plan that stuff, man. Like, that's a lot of thing I try to push too, is like, dude, do those trips, because you keep saying next year and next year and next year, and it just keeps going. It's just, you got to pick a date, put it on the calendar, and stick to it. If you plan far enough ahead, you can do it, but you just just got to do it.
No, it's like, we have a firm like standing thing with my buddies, where it's like, that first week of December, we are going deer hunting. There's I don't care if you have your brothers getting married, your parents in it, you're not going. I've had like friends miss like kids' football's playoff games. And so it's just like, this is the firm on the calendar does not change. And I think that's, you know, it's what I look forward to the most. I mean, we make the joke. It's like, you know, we work 51 weeks a year for this 1 week to all deer hunt together for 4 or 5 days.
100%.
But I want to kind of back up a little bit. I want to hear how you met your wife, and, you know, when did you kind of realize where she's like, oh, you like to fish. I like to fish. I like to hunt too. And like, what was that dynamic like when y'all first started dating?
Well, we weren't really, cause we were both in college at the time, and we weren't really hunting and fishing that much. Like, I had a couple spots with some buddies that we can go hunt dove, cause they worked on some ranches around College Station, and like, we go dove hunting and stuff like that. But, my wife and I actually met at the Dixie Chicken in College Station, which, if you're an Aggie, which you'll know what the Dixie Chicken is. It's a pretty popular bar there. But we met there, through just some mutual friends hanging out. And then, we just started dating pretty much. Like, a couple months after we met. She says we met a time before that, if you ask her, because we had another mutual friend that she says introduced us, but I don't remember for whatever reason.
You know, we're not going to go there.
Yeah, we're not going to go there.
Carbonated beverages might have been involved.
For whatever reason, I don't remember that, so it didn't happen. But no, like she knew that I was like, I mean, I was hanging out with a bunch of guys that rodeoed. I was doing some day work and working cows and doing that kind of stuff. So she kind of knew how I grew up. And then, you know, I mean, the first thing we were talking about is like, what are our passions? What we like doing? And probably told her something about some hog dogs or something like that. And then, and roping, that was like what I was really into at the time. And then, but as we kept like going on a date, like her mom fishes a lot. So we went on a few fishing trips together. So we got to do that kind of stuff. Like her mom fishes a whole lot. She got to shoot her first big game animal, which was a black buck that her mom, got a hunt. So that was the first time we ever went hunting together. And then, I shot a white-tailed doe and a buck or something like that. But it was a whole lot of fun. Like I really like hunting with her. Like it, and it starts out kind of slow because like she has levels to where she wants to go hunt. Like I want to go hunt grizzly bear in Alaska. She doesn't want to do that. Right. Cape Buffalo, I'm all in. She doesn't want to do that. So there's different levels to where she will go and where she won't go. But like hunting whitetails, hunting exotics, she's all about it. I mean, she's been to Africa. I haven't.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a couple years into us dating. Because we were her mom and her were part of the Ranching and Wildlife Committee for Houston Rodeo, and then I was subsequently after that as well. But she comes home one day and she's like, "Hey, I got this cool opportunity." And I was like, "What's that?" And she's like, "Well, there's some ladies and my mom, you know, on the committee that are putting together a trip." And I was like, "Oh, that'll be fun. Where are y'all gonna go?" She's like, "South Africa." And I was like, "To do what?" Well, some of us want to hunt, and then some of us are going to like just like sightsee and do like wine trips and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, wait a second, like you're going to go, you just hunted a black buck less than a year ago or a little over a year ago. And now you're going to go to Africa, this thing that I've been dreaming of since I was a little kid. And it was a moment that I had to like kind of, in other words, not being an asshole. Because on one shoulder,
hey, been there.
One shoulder, I'm like, "What in the world is going on right now?" And then on the other shoulder, I'm like, "That's pretty badass." But yeah, in the fact of it was an all girls trip, so it wasn't even a chance for me to be invited. It was like the other little stinger in there. But yeah, she shot a sable and a mountain reed buck, and she got to take her camera and like photograph a bunch of stuff. But like, so like I said, she loves hunting to an extent, right? Like they, some of the places they went in South Africa, like there was a lot more wine drank than maybe animals were hunted for some of the ladies on the trip, which isn't a bad thing. You do your own thing, but it wasn't like hunting in the bush per se, yeah. You know, but, we just kind of grew after that. And she kind of realized that either, and for good or not, like I'm going to go, and I try to get her to go as much as she wants to. But she also understands, like we talked about, like there's some trips that are just the boys, but I try to make sure that I spend enough time to be like, "Hey, I want to go hunt with her too." Cause I mean, it's not like she's a bad hunter either. So it's not, you know, I want to bring her along because, I mean, she spotted animals. She's made stalks on whitetails and like all that kind of stuff. So it's not like I'm bringing somebody that's not equipped for the task or is like going to complain or, you know, be upset about what's going on. She's pretty much down for anything.
Dude, that's awesome. So do you like, because, you know, I may be stealing for my own benefit here.
Go for it, man.
Do you like set up and be like, "Hey, honey, this weekend, this is a guy's trip," and you just kind of establish those weekends? Or, I mean, I don't know what your kind of like dynamic is or how far away you are. Cause there's for me, example, I live, if I really get on it, and I hope Wise County Sheriff's Office isn't listening, I can get from my house in North Fort Worth to my family's ranch in about 45 minutes. So there's a lot of times where it's like, especially in the early bow season, where I'm like, I don't have anything going on. Sun doesn't go down till 8 o'clock still. It's 5:45. I'm gone. I've gotten myself in trouble a couple times because I may or may not rearrange some dinner plans from time to time. But what's how do you kind of manage that dynamic?
I mean, mostly for me, it's like I try to take care of everything as much as I can that I have to. And then to where, because I mean, for me, most of the time, it's like my buddies calling me like, hey, I got this trip lined out. Do you want to bring a camera or do you want to like hunt or whatever it is? Luckily, it's been like ahead of time, but there are some instances where it's like tomorrow. Like for a couple years ago, I was coming back from South Texas and from turkey hunting, and my buddy Tim, well, my buddy now, but he wasn't at the time. It was just a guy that I knew on Instagram that threw Instagram DMs. Like he liked our rodeo stuff and he liked some of our hunting stuff, and we just talked about it. And he sends me a message and he's like, hey man, here's my number. Give me a call if you can. And I call him. And he's like, hey, we just had a camera guy back out. We're going on this turkey hunting trip up in Nebraska, and we need a camera guy. Can you be here? And I was like, well, be where? He's like, well, can you meet me at my house in Arkansas tomorrow? And then we'll hop in the truck and we'll go to Nebraska and go hunt turkeys. And I was already on my way home from hunting. And I knew this was going to be a hard phone call to make. And luckily, like we didn't have Haston, which is my son. We didn't have him now. It was just us. So I call her and I'm like, hey, I'm on my way home. But thing is, like Tim just called me and he said that he needs a camera guy in Nebraska. So that means I got to wash my clothes tonight and then leave for Nebraska tomorrow. And I don't know what I did, you know, to be this lucky, but like my wife's like, are you sure you want to, like, she wasn't worried about me going hunting. She was like, how do you know this guy? Like, this is, have you ever met him before? You're going to meet somebody in Arkansas? Like, what is all this going on? So most of the time she's like, okay, like, and lets me go. Cause she knows how much I love it. And like, I've been pretty honest about how much I love it. I will say that. Mm-hmm. So, I'm lucky in the fact of if there's a hunt next weekend, I'm probably going to get to go as long as there's nothing else like in the way of that. And then I also try to like do stuff with her because I know she wants to go out too. For sure. Had a lease last year, so that was pretty easy. And we would all just go hunt together and then hang out and do all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of what we've done in the past. And like when we've been filming, we've both been filming because we could both go and then like go with different people, whoever's hunting and everything. So we're usually together when we're doing most of our hunting, but she lets me go by myself with the boys pretty heck much yeah, whenever I want to.
No, I for sure. And so pivoting a little bit as far as like your own personal hunting, how are you managing like between like the business and, you know, personal stuff and how do you like, how much, I guess, business camera work are you doing these days versus like actual hunting? Or is it kind of starting to just blend together?
So that's where it kind of like, where it kind of got where I said earlier, where like I was trying to do more hunting for, you know, filming for stuff for other people. And like, while I did have those opportunities, of course, a lot of it wasn't content that I could necessarily use, right? So it wasn't really promoting me. So, most of the stuff that we were doing was like trying to create content. So, but like some of the paid gigs that we had, we couldn't use. And then like, I would just go film my buddies and stuff. Or if we got the chance to go, like that's how it was. So there hasn't been really a line drawn between like me hunting and not filming it since, I don't know, probably 2020. Sure. It's been so like not, I want to say sparse because we've had some awesome opportunities, but it's like we got to kind of capitalize on these opportunities where we can to, you know, get to where we want to go.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes sense. Do you ever like self film? Because that's something I've dabbled in, and it's a lot of work.
Yes, it's a lot of work and it's hard and it's very frustrating and it tends to not go well. I've tried to do a lot of self filming with my bow. Cause I'm, like I said, I like all weapons. I mean, we can shoot rifles, we can shoot bolt guns, ARs, pistols, whatever. I like all guns, but all weapons, but the bow hunting I got into of course, with just in around that same COVID time, because it was something I could do in my backyard. I didn't have to go or like pay for a range and pack all the guns up and do all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I can walk out and shoot a couple arrows and then go back to editing or whatever I was doing.
For sure.
So I've tried to do a lot of self-filming with my bow. Because sometimes Megan and I would split up on that lease that we had, and she'd go to one blind and I'd go to another. We'd hunt together and she'd film. But yeah, dude, it's frustrating. It's great when it works and it all comes together and you get both shots, you know, but it is, mm-hmm. it is tough to manage because, you always don't have like the perfect equipment. Like you see these guys that are on YouTube and everything else and with all the camera arms and, mm-hmm. and different things. And like you see it and you're like, okay, I can do that with the stuff I have. And then you start realizing like, hey, these guys are kind of set up a whole lot easier and they have the right tripod because they've already went through three of them that didn't work. You're just on your second mm-hmm. one and still figuring it out.
For sure.
So dude, it's definitely difficult.
Dude, my first few, when I first started dabbling in it 2 years ago, I just bought like the first camera arm I've ever, like, I just, it's like, oh, here's a muddy camera arm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd gotten into, I probably got into saddle hunting pretty heavily, boy, like 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
And so when I lugged out that camera arm for the first time with my saddle, with the platform, all that, sticks, and I'm just like, yeah, we're gonna have to get a different camera arm after I'd already spent, mm-hmm. you know, $150 on the one I just had because the thing was so dang heavy. But I will say, I don't. For me, when I self film, I swear to you, it's something goes wrong every time. Yeah. I think that's just part of the nature of the beast, where it's like you're gonna just have to deal with something.
Yeah,
this year, I shot the buck I shot this year out at my family's place. I grabbed the wrong battery, just went, got set up everything, got my gun on the tripod and, went to flip on the camera and it was dead. And I was like, I grabbed the battery that was dead because for some reason I set them on the counter next to each other. Cause that's totally yeah. smart and logical. So I didn't get that, but
yeah. Well, not to be a one-upper, right? But, this year, kind of the same deal. I get set up on this buck that I'm going to shoot. I built this new AR and six arc. You know, I've been waiting to test this gun out and shoot something with it. And I'm all jacked up and excited. I get this cull buck, big forks that comes in on camera. And my father-in-law is like, you know what? That guy's got to go. So I go sit the first afternoon. He doesn't show up. The same group of does comes in that he was running with, but he doesn't show up. Go back the next morning. Same group of does comes in. He shows up. I've been filming, getting B-roll footage. This is going to be a sick video. Remember to do my intro. Said everything correct. Get everything set up. He walks in. He jumps the fence. Get him walking in on camera, walking around. Get my gun up, trying to find him because he's moving around a lot. And it's like where that feeder was, it's like kind of down a slope. So like all you could see was the top of his back. I've had the camera running this whole time because, you know, I've done this a few times before, right? Get my gun set up. He gets in position. He's kind of cording away. I go to check the camera and I stop recording. Get back on the gun, pull the trigger, shoot the deer, get jacked up because I'm like, where did he go? Like, okay, like, when I shot him, he fell right there. So like, I didn't see him run yeah. off, didn't see him jump, kick, do nothing. And I'm like, okay, all right, calm down. Everything's good. Let's look at the camera and go look at the camera. And it's just like, you know, usually you hit record and it's all red and I go to stop it and I hit the button to stop it and it starts. And I said, you've got to be joking me.
Like, dude, I will say like filming rifle hunts by yourself is harder because for me, at least, I do, because like when you're bow hunting, like you have your whole field of vision, right? So the camera is yeah. kind of the main thing you're worried about. But then like in some of the spots I'll hunt, because I'll set up outside of blinds and stuff and try and catch stuff in travel quarters, especially during the rut. And you're like, in the scope, camera, in the scope, camera. Make sure everything's good. Because you know you're kind of, especially as they're walking up, because you're trying to film, trying to make sure you don't need to like adjust your tripod too much. Yep. And but where it's like you're doing it with a bow, it's just like, okay, I can kind of move this. My whole field of vision is here. Got my bow in my hand. I find it so much easier to film bow hunts versus doing the rifle hunt thing. Maybe you disagree, but that's just been in my experience.
Yeah. Maybe I can agree with that. Cause like I've had better success filming my bow hunts than my rifle hunts, my own personal rifle hunts. Right. And it's always worked better when I was with the bow, but then like, so buck falls, I'm waiting there for a little while. And then I finally like creep down and he's laying dead, like right there where he was, but I'm still like kind of sick. Like, and I texted Megan cause she was watching Haston, and I was like, I shot the buck, but I didn't get it on camera. And she's like, what happened? I was like, I double tapped the record button. And she's like, oh my gosh. And she already knew like I was going to be like upset. Right. But I really wasn't. Cause I was glad I got the buck. Yeah, I was kind of upset. But like when I was even sitting in the blind, I just turned my camera on for the video. Cause like that's another thing, man. Like there's a lot of people that create content, and don't get me wrong, it looks great, but they sometimes don't always tell the truth, right? And I always want to be like, I want to tell the truth about what we're doing. So I just turned the camera on. I was like, guys, I made a mistake. I did what most people are going to do at one point in time in their life, and I'd hit the I double tap the record button. Like that's all there is to it. And you know, just tell the truth and what you're doing. So sorry I didn't get the shot, guys. You know, watching, but like it's gonna happen. Like you can't be that upset about it. You got to wake up and chase whitetails, and then you got to actually take a whitetail, and like you got meat in the freezer and another experience. Like you can't be that mad about it at the end of the day.
No, for sure. I mean, it's going to bound to happen to anyone eventually. I mean, even doing the podcast thing, I'm like, I know it's going to come where I just like get to the end of an episode and I'm just going to like end it, and then just nothing's going to save. Just it hadn't happened yet. I mean, knock on wood. I just put the announcer jinx on myself here, but it hadn't happened yet, but I know eventually it's bound to happen. That's just going to be part of it.
It's the nature of the business, man. We're all human.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's even, you know, loop things in here full circle. It's like hunting, you know, you need a lot of luck involved too. So, and sometimes you get unlucky.
Yeah, 100%, man. And I mean, it's kind of the same thing like in rodeo. Like if you think about it, like a lot of friends that do that, and it's like you could do everything right and you could still lose. Like there could be somebody faster than you. Like you did your job, but they just did it a little bit better. And sometimes the animals do it a little bit better.
Exactly. Sometimes you just get beat. You don't lose, you just get beat. And it's two different things.
Yeah.
That's what people tell me. But
yeah, that's kind of how the I was going to say about like the Taos stuff and growing that, but it's like I got into working in the outdoor industry, which has helped a lot too. So after COVID, I started working for Horizon Firearms in College Station, or Casper Outdoors is the parent company, but they built custom bolt action rifles. Derek Ratliff down there started that company, and he's one of the guys that created the 22 Creedmoor. That caliber and getting it approved by Sammy and all that kind of stuff. So I got to help a lot of people walk through hunts and help them build some pretty cool rifles there. Awesome. Yeah. And then, did that, got to go a bunch of shows, meet a bunch of cool people in the industry. And then now I work for a silencer shop here in Cedar Park. And then, I'm on the marketing team there. And then, so I get to essentially shoot guns for a living. So, double dipping on like both being like the stuff that we do on the side, and then actually my day job too involves firearms.
That's where I've started to, my interest has been peaked again. There's so much about my like mindset around hunting has changed in the last like 6 months I've been doing this podcast. Cause 6 months ago, like I was always the guy where I have one deer rifle. It is a hand-me-down 30-06. I shoot a 180 grain bullet out of it because I don't want to chase them. I don't want to deal with anything. I want to shoot a little high and forward. And like you said, I want them to drop dead down where they're standing. And they do most of the time. But, you know, I've kind of wanted to dabble into some setting up, you know, because look, if you're hunting over a deer feeder, like anything can really get the job done. 100%. Because most people aren't shooting more past most deer feeders aren't past 200 yards, at least in the state of Texas. But there are some spots that you know, as I've broken down properties a little bit more, especially the way my property sets up is I've gone from October like 20th to December 4th without seeing a buck go to corn, especially in like a heavy acorn where I'm at. There's the acorn crop can dictate how a lot of stuff happens.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So I've had to get very, very creative. And I've started to realize probably about a year ago, but really 6 months ago, as I started talking to people where I'm like, hey, I might need to, look at something a little bit different here that shoots a little flatter and gets out there a little bit more. Cause there's a couple spots I'd like to hunt here, and that's going to be about 300, 400 yards.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something too. And I mostly bow hunt, but the rifle thing, like you said, a lot of it stems from me being a cheap ass too. Cause like you said, that 30-06, I just take it out of the case and that thing is humming exactly where I want it to go.
Yeah, dude, you don't fix anything that's not broken.
Exactly. I think one of my buddies put it best. He's like, well, if it wasn't for the 06, we'd all be speaking German. So
100%.
So
I got to see a lot of different animals die from a lot of different calibers. Because I mean, like when I worked at Horizon, my job was to, you come in, you want to build a rifle, you got a elk hunt that you're going on and you want to build a rifle. Cool. We're going to go over caliber. We're going to go over barrel length. We're going to go over, do you want, custom paint job? Because like I said, we're building custom rifles and all that kind of stuff. But at the core of it was, what are you going to hunt? And then like, what caliber you want to build this rifle with? And we could go over like a whole many different calibers and what all they can do, right? But I always said, like, it's shot placement. A lot of people say, if you're going to hunt an elk, don't dare take a 6.5 Creedmoor. You know, whitetails, everything else, everybody hates on 6.5 Creedmoor. And I'm like, a lot of people don't shoot very well. It's not, sometimes it's not the caliber, but everybody gets used to, being kind of shoot middle with 30 cal bullet, and you're 9 times out of 10, the job's going to be done. But if you're using something a little more specialized, then you got to be able to shoot a little better. You know, different bullets do different things. But like I said, I've seen 7 PRCs. We did a lot of 6.5 PRCs, the 22 Creedmoor, of course, which is a hell of a round for being a 22. I have seen a lot of animals, because it's a heavier grain bullet. It's like 75, 80, 88 grains. There's some 90 grain burgers that some people shoot, but it's moving fast, over 3,000 feet per second. So there's a lot of energy in that bullet when it hits animals. So that would be a solid one I'd pick. I mean, a 6 Creedmoor, the 6 Arc. I'm a big fan of 6 Arc. Those are all cool calibers you can use and shoot. And like I bought, I had a 6 Arc that I have, and we were shooting and testing some cans a couple weeks ago at work. And like, I'll take it and use it on some of them. And then, we were shooting out like 212, and my hold at 212 is like barely, like, take your reticle, your dot, put it at the top of the target, go maybe a little bit higher, and you're hitting center at 212 yards. So it's real easy and real flat shooting. Like it's a gamer cartridge, I think.
No, I think, I relate a lot of stuff back to golf, because that's like my summer thing. And even I'd had this conversation with, do you know who Troy Fowler is, the Ranch Fairy guy?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know him personally, but I've watched his stuff and like seen him on the Hunt in Public and all that. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we had a conversation about like bow setups. And the one thing that came up that I accidentally said that he kind of was like, wow, I like this. But it's like, it's how much forgiveness do you want to build into it? Too, as well. We talk about,
I saw that clip on your page.
Yeah. And so like, you even go into like rifle setups. It's like, you look at what I'm shooting for like whitetail. It's like, all right, that's probably like the most forgiving setup you can probably build. Cause like, if I hit that deer in the front side of its, or even, and I told him I'd set it up too, for the reason I got for an 180 grain bullet, a whitetail, is my brother got invited to an elk hunt. He doesn't hunt. And he's like, I don't want to buy a gun. Can I like take your 30-06? I was like, yeah, we're gonna have to make some adjustments for sure. But I just never signed the thing back in. But, But the thing is, you know, if I hit anywhere from liver to the front of the shoulder, I mean, that deer is going to die. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you, like you said, you get into a little bit more specialized cartridge, like a 6.5, where, you know, shot placement is going to matter a little bit just simply because the bullet is half the weight. But you can do more. It's like, you know, it's like you're playing golf. It's you can have super game improvement irons that are super easy to hit, but you're going to lose some precision versus, you know, you go play blades where the sweet spot's super tiny. You got to know how to hit them, but you can do a lot more stuff with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think really specking out equipment, whether you're trying to make something go down range, whether it's a golf ball, arrow, or bullet, it's all, what are you looking to do and what are your tendencies and what do you like?
Oh yeah. And I've gotten more into it since I've been at Silencer Shop. Cause we have to, part of my job is to test a lot of these, all of these cans that come in that we carry, and we have to put them on different setups to test them out to know what works on. There's suppressors that work great on a bolt gun, but I wouldn't pick that same suppressor for a gas gun, like an AR platform or anything like that. Mm. So it kind of knowing that is like piqued my interest and got my tism going. So it's been like, I want to build all these different things and test and shoot. And it's just a lot of fun. Like I'm jealous of guys that are like, I'm strictly a bow hunter. I'm strictly a duck hunter. I'm strictly this. Cause like it doesn't stop for me. Like it just, it's just a whole year of like being interested and wanting to do stuff and all different kind of hunts and chase different animals. With different weapons.
I mean, if you got the Tinker Bug, you got the Tinker Bug, and nothing's ever going to stop that.
Yeah, no. Like, and when I found out that I could build my own ARs, I was like, wait a minute. Like, I don't have to just buy one out of the box. Like, I can literally put every little piece together and make it exactly how I want it. I was like, yeah, I want to do that.
See, that's, I don't need you telling that. That's another expensive hobby I don't need.
Yeah, and I mean, you can make it. It's just like everything else. You can make it as expensive as you want to. Like some guys, sure. Like say, like for a receiver set. For me, if it's in spec, I'm happy with it. There's a lot of guys that are like, I want the tightest tolerances that there is for my receiver set, which is like your upper, your chamber, and then like your lower. Me, I'm good with it. I'll go with Arrow Precision, but my barrel's proof. My trigger is CMC. Like there's different things that you could spend money on where they matter, right? More than spending more money on that. Like your buffer system, like just make sure you have the right weight. Like that's what's the best thing to do. And you can just do little upgrades and stuff like that as you go.
Dude, that's, yeah. Because I'm the same way as you. If I start digging into little stuff like that, I'm gonna go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, because I want my stuff to be good. Like, I want to be able to, like, okay, if I put this up for 2 months and I'm like, oh, I got a hunt, which do I want to take? I want to take that one. I want to be able to be like, of course, you can, when you get to wherever you're going, you can verify it. But I want to verify with 2 shots and nope, we're still ready to go. All right, guys, pour me another drink. I don't got to touch this gun until in the morning. We're just hanging out and having a good time now.
Exactly. Well, speaking of heading out and going to hunting, so I know it's still June here, but what do you kind of got in the docket for hunting season 2026?
Speaking of putting guns together, I just got a Seekins PH3 and 7 PRC, which is another awesome caliber that I've seen a lot of people kill stuff with, and I've been very happy with since I've been shooting it. But I have a mule deer tag in Idaho in October. So, I try to play the game as much as I can. However I can go hunting, I'm going hunting. So if that's high fence, low fence here in Texas, if it's trying to put in for tags in Idaho, gaining points in other states and just trying to go hunting as much as I can. But Idaho's a good time. My buddy Jared and I had this, the same area tag for archery a couple years ago. And then we put in for the rifle season this year and we wound up drawing the tag. So we'll be headed up there in October for that. Of course, do some dove hunting. That's every year. I'm not going to go a season without going dove hunting because, like I said, shotguns and stuff was like my first love and passion. Try to do some whitetail hunting. Unfortunately, we lost our lease that we had last year. So I'm I'm on the hunt. I'm on the hunt to go hunting, but looking for another one if an opportunity pops up, or we'll go do something else. I got lucky. A buddy of mine, Lane, shout out to Lane. He got a hold of me the other day because he has a property with the landowner he knows that has some black buck that he wants off. So next weekend, I'm probably going to take the six arc out and try to go shoot me a black buck. That's more of a, like I said, go shoot me a black buck than me going like hunting. Cause it's a smaller property. And this guy's just like, I want them out of here. They're roaming around, and he's got other animals.
It's called a varmint hunt.
Exactly. He's got other animals he's trying to feed. So, we're going to go do that and put some meat in the freezer cause they taste delicious. And, just whatever comes up, man. I'm definitely an opportunist. I don't get to, as much as I can, I try to plan out hunts, right? But most of it's kind of spur of the moment and invites and stuff like that. Like you'll learn when, since you have the podcast, there'll be a lot of people reaching out to you, be like, "Hey man, you want to come do this?" Or, "Hey man, you want to come do that?" And that's another cool thing about working in the industry. It's like you have a lot of people doing stuff, and as long as you're a good person, you're probably going to get invited to a lot of places. And we do a lot of stuff with different organizations like SCI and Texas Wildlife Association. We do a lot of the adult learn to hunt program with TWA. So we mentor hunts with them. So we'll do a couple of those this season, which is a great program if people are looking, you know, to go on hunting trips. And you don't have to be a novice. There are other hunts, I mean, that you can apply for that are a little more hardier, I guess you could say, than shooting just white-tailed does and hogs and stuff. But that's a great program to reach out to. And then we also do a lot like DSC and stuff like that. So, like I said, if you get in the mix, like if you, I tell people this because I get this question a lot. It's like, how do I get to go hunting? How do I get the opportunity? It's like, you got to put yourself in these places. Like, you got to go to these trade shows. You got to go meet people because, like, they're all good people. And you make friends and meet friends, and, like, opportunities arise. Like, I'm not going to say somebody's just going to let you go hunt for free on their place all the time, but maybe you might catch a discount. Maybe you might catch somebody that just wants, that likes you and wants to just take you along. Like, you just kind of got to put yourself in those places. And I'm a testament to it. It will happen.
Dude, that's awesome. I mean, it's definitely interesting, all the different, you know, the access that the people have to things that you wouldn't even like expect either, that they don't even put out there in the media and stuff like that. Just because they don't, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are very in the, and I'm hoping not out people. I know I'm not, but a lot of people who have some pretty cool opportunities that they don't even want to put out into the social media world just because they don't want, you know, that's like their own personal little thing.
Yeah, exactly. But if they meet somebody face to face and they're like, "Oh, dude, I really like this dude," or like this girl or whoever, it's like, I want to invite them to my place. I want to show them, because a lot of these people, man, they know what they have, and they know it's a special opportunity and a special place, especially some of these larger ranches and stuff. And it might be selfish or whatever it is, but they do want to share that with other people.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's, you know, that's the awesome part too, is because, you know, there's, I haven't met any, like, I've, a lot of me interviewing people has just been just me shooting Instagram DMs, like, you know, kind of like a DDU to complete strangers, like, "Hey, do you want to like come on?" And everyone's just been super nice. You know, there's no one's been a real asshole or anything like that. And, otherwise I'd probably just end the podcast, never post it. Because I've affirmed no assholes rule. And I'm not afraid to let people know it, because I've had that run-ins a few times out at my family's place. So, which I think everyone has.
Oh yeah, but 100%.
But well, Brandon, I appreciate it. I know it's getting late here, and you got a kid that probably keeps you up at night a little bit. So I don't want to steal too much of your sleep here.
It's all good, man. He's actually been pretty good, and like I said, we've been doing this, my wife and I, we've been doing this for a little while now. So we've already set our expectations on how things go. And like, we already know that there's going to be some late nights, and I mean, I really enjoy what we get to do. It is a lot of work. But it is, it's rewarding. It's fun. Like like I said, when I started Taos Hunt Club, there's no way I could have told you this is where it would end up. Like, we've gotten to meet some cool people. We've gotten to get involved with things that are going on in Texas and out of state and everything, and kind of be like a little bit of a voice, I guess you would say. That's where I really want to take it. I want my son to have more opportunities than I had. I want other people's kids to have more opportunities than we had. And if one thing I could say is, like, if we don't do something about it, if we don't make sure these things are top of mind of people that don't love it as much as we do, we're going to lose it. I mean, there's a lot of things. Like, you talk to Cable on with him, and he kind of explained that whole deal that's going down. And it's like, man, if we don't have people, if we don't stop bickering over the high fence, low fence, over the bow versus the rifle, like, there's legit people out here that don't want us hunting, regardless of whatever weapon you use. And if we don't get together, because they're together and well funded, it's not our next generations aren't going to be able to do the cool things that we get to do. So
and it is a slippery slope. That's my thing. Like, I could give two, you know, referring to the mountain lions thing, I couldn't give two shits about shooting a mountain lion. But I know as soon as they come for the mountain lion hunters, they're going to come for the everything coyote else. Hunters. And yep. then it's just, you know, and it's the same way everything else works, is how do you boil frog slowly?
Yep.
Just crank the water up on them. And by the time that, you know, our kids are 40 years old, there is no more honey.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we look back and we're 80 years old and we go, how did that happen?
Yeah. And I mean, that I'm like the biggest person, but like I have a voice. Everybody has a voice. So I'm going to use it to further what we're doing. If I get, you know, 100 people to see it on Instagram, that's 100 people that didn't see it before. So I'm good with that. And like, we're trying to expand. We are expanding Taos. It's, I haven't really announced it yet. But we have Taos is now FFL and SOT, so we can.
Heck yeah.
We are a dealer for silencer shop. So if you're looking for a suppressor, you need recommendations. What better than the guy that gets to do it every day, you know? So
absolutely,
that's something we're working on. I mean, a lot of people that I've had on the podcast, we like to support their brand and their brands and things they do and organizations. So I always tell people, like, if you can support SCI, support, you know, Texas Trophy Hunters, support TWA and these organizations that are fighting for this stuff, even if it's just paying the $35 membership, but like, that gets you so much access to other people that are just like-minded like you. And like you said, get you those opportunities maybe that you didn't have before. So get involved at some extent. I'm not expecting everybody to be able to start a podcast or show up at every meeting, but like I said, you can get a membership, and that kind of stuff helps out.
For sure. Absolutely. Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, Brandon. Hopefully we get to do this again at some point. I'm definitely going to bug you after that mule deer hunt, because I'm going to hear, man, how that goes.
Yeah, 100%. You got my phone number. You got my email. Hit me up anytime. Like I said, if I can help anybody else on anything you're looking for, shoot us a DM on Taos or my personal or anything like that, and I'll be glad to help.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you, man.